greatest song you've ever heard, Bob?
No comment. Frankie Avalon. I love this song.
There are probably about three people out there that remember this.
No way. Folks, I want some cards and letters on this. Emails. Tell me you know Frankie. Isn't it a great song?
I love the girl with sunlight in her hair. And take the brightest stars.
This is Bo Mitchell. Bob Belts, my co-host. The program is You Get the Blessing. And every week we introduce you to somebody that you're never going to forget the rest of your life, even though it's radio. And today our guest is no exception. He's one of the great guys we've ever met, Peb Jackson. Peb, welcome to the program.
Love being here. Thank you.
Bob, how long have you known this guy?
Oh, man, 25 years?
At least 1983, 84.
Right through there. Yeah.
So what, and you too.
Same stretch when you came through town with Focus on the Family when you met us both?
That's right.
Well, you know, the connection with us was Dick Savage, because Peb had been a great friend of Dick's, and Dick was on our staff at Cherry Hills Community Church. And we met and introduced you to some guys.
Met both of you guys about that time.
Yeah.
It's been stayed friends ever since.
Awesome. Most of it.
Bob went through a stretch where he didn't like me.
I didn't like Peb at all.
Yeah,
No. So, Peb Jackson, get into a fight. You've done more things with your life than 50 people put together that I know of, but I always am just fascinated at how God's woven all your experiences and used you and Sharon in so many great ways. So tell us about life in the Peb Jackson household when you were a little kid, and what were the influences on you early, and how did you come to faith in the first place?
Great. Bo, I love talking about that because I felt and I feel very fortunate to have been raised with the kind of parents I had and to have been raised in Western Kansas. Actually was born in Lawrence and raised in a little Quaker community in Western Kansas, where I'll bet there's a bunch of people listening to this broadcast know about and most others don't know about, a little place called Hamlin, Kansas. And
I didn't know that. And
is that right?
I've spent some miserable hours in Lawrence, Kansas, trying to play basketball for Colorado.
And I spent some great hours in Colorado, in Lawrence, Kansas, watching KU win.
Yeah, that's sort of what I was referring to.
Yeah, right.
How many years were you there growing
up?
Well,
actually, just the first few years of my life. And then when we moved to Western Kansas, we actually had season tickets to all the KU football and basketball games for many years during the glory era of some of the names that people would recognize. Gale Sayers, John Hadle, you go down the list.
And you've heard Rich Beach talk about me holding JoJo White to his career high at Kansas.
No.
Yeah. I played the whole game, scored 0 points, and guarded him the whole night. And
no
he scored
kid.
His career high. Yeah.
Well, that should be on an all-time highlights film.
I've thought about making a plaque of that and sticking it up on the wall at Fog Allen Fieldhouse. They surely wouldn't take it down.
No, but I've seen you shoot 30-foot jump shots even past a little past your prime.
I believe that.
Yeah.
Back to you, Kansas. So
yes.
That's really cool. Western Kansas.
Western Kansas, and this is a town of about 700 people with a little Quaker boarding school. And my dad was a headmaster at this Friends Academy. And my Quaker heritage goes all the way back to England. I'm grateful for it. My grandmother was a Quaker minister. I can remember going into a little church in Western Kansas with my grandfather holding his hand, sitting on the front row and listening to my grandmother preach. I didn't know it was controversial until I got older, but but it was a rich texture to my early life. And you ask how I became a Christian or my journey of faith.
Yes.
And I think that the portrayal of genuine, authentic faith was so rich and so attractive to me that I absorbed it. And I do believe that comes a time when you have to make a decision. I mean, you come to that point of decisiveness. And that did happen when I was in church, a little church called Haviland Friends Church. And at that time, sometimes you'd stand at the end of the service and they'd sing 4 or 5 verses of Just As I Am or something like that. And once in a while, somebody would come out of their pew and go over and talk to somebody and just say, hey, have you thought about making this decision? And my neighbor, Ron Worden, came over to me as a young boy and said, have you made a decision for Christ? And I realized at that point that I'd been around that environment of religious fervor, but I'm not sure I'd ever made that decision. And right then and there, I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that I wanted to make a decisive point of saying, yes, I give my life to Christ.
Now there's
unreservedly.
2 points I want to make there. How old were you?
I was about 10.
So the first point I want to make is someone came up to you and in the right style and tone of voice asked the question.
He had won the right to be heard, actually.
That's another key point.
Yeah.
When it's right, go ahead and ask.
Right.
Where do you stand on this? And you could have said, leave me alone, but it was your time. You said yes.
Right.
So, listeners, you may be on either side of that. There's somebody listening today that's never made the choice. They're still Daffy Ducking it and thinking, hey, I'm a good person. I eat apple pie. My folks went to church, and I'm good to go.
Born in America.
Born in America. Yeah. And that's not the issue at all, is it?
Right. No, actually, I think there is plenty of room for boldness and talking to friends and maybe quietly or whatever approaching people with that, because I believe there's a God-shaped vacuum in every man that can only be filled with Christ, and it's somewhere under the layers of whatever experience or whatever there is that need, that desire, and frequently God uses somebody for the threshold, for the introduction, and usually somebody who's trusted. And Ron Worden was a trusted older person in my life and made that decision.
Wow. So at the age of my granddaughter, Mackenzie, 10.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Good. It was a very good year.
So you signed up and off you go.
Yeah.
So.
Well, interesting enough, I mean, that was a formative years of my life in terms of my faith, and it was attractive. I was reading the other day a Eugene Peterson commentary in his message version of Scripture, and he talks about at the end of Luke, he has a commentary about joy, and he talked about how joy was such a hallmark of the early church, even though they were getting dragged out of their houses, beaten to death, but still what characterized them was a hilariousness of spirit or joy. And then he said Tertullian and Tolstoy both became Christians, not necessarily because just what they read in Scripture, but because they saw how Christians live and they coveted what they had. And I would say that I saw how authentic Christians lived in Haviland, Kansas, and I coveted what they had. And it became a fabric of my life.
Well, you've had such an incredible life. I really don't even know how to touch on the topics here other than, I don't even, what are we, 10 minutes in here? So how do we jump forward? How about if I just do word association? Is that strange? Uh-huh. That's a strange way to do an interview, but I'm just going to do, you just respond quickly.
Let's see if it works.
I'll have 8 or 10. Things.
You can cut and paste this radio broadcast.
We're not
right?
going to. Oh. Let's start with Sharon.
Sharon, great.
Make this quick because I got 10 listed.
Okay, my love of 40 years this year, and we're celebrating all year our 40th anniversary. And I was telling somebody in Dallas, Texas this week, I look forward as much now to being with her as I did in the first year of our marriage. I mean, God has blessed us with this desire and this interest in each other that has persisted for 40 years, and I'm grateful.
I can see that door swinging both ways. You're both interesting, wonderful people. So.
Yeah.
So how about Jim Dobson?
Jim Dobson certainly was a major feature and factor in my faith journey. And I told him at his kind of retirement dinner at Focus on a Family last month, I told him that I don't think anybody was more influential in my professional life than Jim Dobson. He gave me a chance in the early years of Focus on a Family, which I helped start also, but he gave me an opportunity to forge my own path early in the life of Focus on a Family, both around North America and around the world. and I will forever. And I told him this to his face and everybody else who was present, that I'm grateful for him, and I honor him and I love him.
How many years were you at Focus?
Well, I was on the board, initial board, for about 5 years, and then I joined full-time the staff. I was the second male employee, and I was there for about 12 years. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So these are going to be random.
But let me just tell you, I didn't agree with everything he did. I didn't agree with all he did politically. And so we had moments of disagreement, but I think that's a good thing between friends, if you can create a climate where you can trust each other enough to express discontent or disappointment or disagreement.
Bob and I disagree, for example, on the Bible. I read the Living Bible, which he says is not really a Bible.
Mm-hmm. And on Frankie Avalon, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
And on that song. On that, so. You can edit that.
I
okay,
might agree with
a
Bob
strange,
on that.
Here's a strange
Okay.
Elk Canyon Ranch.
Elk Canyon Ranch, one of the great guest ranches that was ever put together in Montana. My dear friend Hugo Shulkoff from Dallas built that ranch, the gathering place for many friends over the years, over a period of about 12 years. Great fishing, incredible food, and an awesome arena and environment for forging friendships that have lasted all my life. And unfortunately, I lost Hugo and three of his friends and my really good friends in a plane crash coming back from an event there about 25 years ago. And it's so, I mean, it's the good, the bad, and the ugly of life that Elk Canyon represents.
That's Pep
Jackson. And you were there, too.
A few years. I think I was there the year before those fellows died in that plane crash.
Yeah.
A couple years before
that.
Listen to the voice of Peb Jackson. I'm Bo Mitchell. Bob Belts is my co-host today, and we're just playing a little rapid fire here, trying to walk through some chapters of this amazing life Peb has lived. How about Oliver North?
Oliver North, man, I haven't even talked about him for a long time, but at one time when he was front page news and on the tip of lots of people's tongue, he was a very good friend. I took him climbing on a dad's course in the Yosemite area of California. I'll never forget. He was a cowboy. He was a household name. But we were out in the mountains of the High Sierra, and he had a ratty pair of boots on. And here's this guy who was looked at, with a certain amount of influence in reference to his exploits as a soldier and everything, and he had these boots on that he couldn't hardly walk in. I had to loan him a pair of boots. It just flashed in my mind that during his time before Congress, when he was some of those amazing pictures of this one guy sitting on a table with all of these senators and maybe two dozen senators on tiered tables above him, and then a press behind him, and the pressure was unbelievable. Every aspect of his life was dissected, every check he ever wrote, every phone call he ever made. And actually, I had a lot of calls and visits from the FBI and others because there were so many phone calls to me. But one thing that held his life together was a powerful Bible study that he was in with the couples, he and his wife was in, and I went to it a couple of times. I'll never forget how that forged the ability to cope with everything that's happened in his life at that time.
Mm. And I bet your friendship was also an anchor for him through all of that. Let's see. How about Rick Warren?
Rick Warren, what an amazing guy. One of the most productive guys I've ever known from a standpoint of writing, of preaching, of teaching, magnificent commitment to the local church, ability to communicate and forge relationships with people outside the church in the total secular community, but more so than anybody I've ever been around. Mm-hmm. I've been with him in Davos, a World Economic Forum, at Harvard, Aspen Institute, South Africa, Rwanda, all over the world, and God has gifted him in an amazing way, and a curiosity about life, I took him to a Bono, a U2 concert, and he knew half the words to the guy's songs.
Got some range.
He's got some range, yeah.
And I don't know anybody that has range like Peb Jackson.
Oh.
I used to. If literally, there's two guys that I know that between the two of them, Peb is one. Know everybody in the world, I think. So you know, anytime you need, I need to connect with the king of Burundi. You know, kind of say, well, Peb knows that guy. Yeah, they went fly fishing together
and knows them on a personal friendship level that sometimes moves over into professional areas. But I was going to ask you just the mix of fundraising is so – that's the wrong phrase for you. Networking is way off. I don't even like the word. It's just it's almost like one of the scriptures Bob and I discuss in terms of the Living Bible and the regular real Bible. But Paul saying all things to all men.
Yeah.
And the quote I like from Living Bible saying, whatever man's like, I try to find a common ground with that man so I may share Christ with him and Christ may save him. I'm like Bob. I've had people say to me, can you do this, this, and this, Bo? And I'll say, no chance. There's actually only one person in the world I know that can do that, and it's Peb Jackson. So I don't say that to polish your boots, neither does Bob, but it's true. So how do you weave all of that in to this one calm, cool, peaceful life with an incredible marriage, incredible pace, just like a Christ-like pace that gets so much done and knows so many people? What's the fabric there that maybe we could share with our listeners that would encourage them?
Well, I'm not sure if this is exactly the direction you wanted to go, but I think, again, we talked about my early life and the fact that that faith was presented to me and was lived in front of me in a way that was so attractive that I wanted to be that way. And so, I remember Jim, the founder of Young Life, Jim Rayburn, said something about it's a sin to bore a kid with the gospel, that the person of Christ is so attractive. And I just think that those of us who are Christ followers, there must be something attractive about Christ followers that people want to connect with, regardless of their faith or whatever. So I think that that was a formative and a substantial part of my life, my early life. And then
right and be attractive and do something that's at least appealing to those that
being curious about life, about being a conversationalist, about being interested in everything. I mean, God gave me a curiosity about everything. I mean, I can't get enough. I had a bookstore at one time called Gutenberg's, and our bookmark said something like, a man can't have too many friends or too many books. For example, my father was a professor, and he constantly read. He had books all over the place. We'd take holidays as a family until late in the night. My mother would be driving a car, and my dad and I would be in the back seat, and we'd be reading books with the lights in the back until 11 o'clock at night sometimes. It was just that thirst for knowledge and thirst for reading. And I think that helped a lot. And then there were other things, just the good fortune I've had to be around people like Rick Warren and Jim Dobson and many other people and people who I worked for on the farms in Western Kansas, Milton Ross and others that nobody even knows. And these people were giants in my life, and I have such a gratefulness for being able to be in their presence. And so I think that all of that wove a package together, that God framed me in a way that allowed me to travel a lot, to work for some pretty cool and pretty interesting people and organizations. And somehow the package was put together, and I'm humbled by it.
Well, you're an incredible package, and we're just blessed to have you as our guest today. This is You Get the Blessing. You're listening to Peb Jackson, and Bob, jump in there if you have anything to ask, because there's so many things we can ask. But I was sitting there thinking, my dad, Dale Mitchell, was a great Major League Baseball player.
Mm-hmm.
So in the 40s and 50s. So I was raised a little bit like what you're describing, mm-hmm. in that my dad taught me, whether it's Mickey Mantle, who's playing center field in Yankee Stadium, mm-hmm. or Joe Smith, who's cleaning up center field after the game, don't be a respecter of persons. These are all just people.
Yeah.
If they're breathing and moving, there's something you can learn from them and act that way. So I try to act the same way that you're talking about, but not as much success as you've had.
My dad died last year at 90 years of age, and he was as I mentioned, a history professor at Azusa Pacific University in Southern California. But he had such a thirst for history. He would take his students on at the end of school year. They'd have a 1 month term when they could do all kinds of creative courses, and he would take them along the Lewis and Clark Trail or the Oregon Trail and camp out and just read the journals and absorb history. And I remember he did that in a way that attracted me to that. And can I mention one other thing about him that was
absolutely
formative?
All you want.
Yeah. Well, no. When he was getting his PhD, he was also kind of assistant pastor at a little Quaker church out in California, and he would go over on Saturday and do volunteer cleanup at the church. And a lot of times, not a lot of other people would show up. And here, my dad was teaching almost full time, working on his PhD, and helping at this little church. I mean, he was maxed out. And one time I said, "Doesn't it kind of bug you that some people feed at the trough here, but they won't contribute?" And he said, "Hey, son, never worry about that." He said, "If you worry about anything, worry about them. They're not getting the blessing of being able to serve in this way." So, I mean, I think it's things like that we get from our dads, and I got from my dad. That was pretty cool.
That's great. One of the toughest questions that I always have to answer when someone finds out I know you, and we have a couple of mutual friends that have periodically asked me this. You probably know who. They say, "Now, what does Peb actually do?"
Yeah,
you know,
right.
And it's very hard to describe. But I know you're sort of in a new phase yourself. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I appreciate that. Sometimes people do say, "Oh, what does Peb Jackson do?" You're hard pressed. I mean, if I'm working for Rick Warren or Focus on the Family, say, "Hey, I work for these guys and I help do certain things there." And now I'm working as Peb Jackson, Jackson Consulting Group. And I consult with different organizations around North America and around the world on things like mentoring or coaching CEOs, and working in development, fundraising opportunities for some of the organizations like Focus on a Family, worked with Young Life, Cure International, that builds hospitals for crippled children around the world, and some very cool things that I get a chance to live life with these organizations and the dramatic, fantastic work that they're doing. And then a lot of my work is in the area of media. I'm a board member of a group called Empower, and we produce films and some other pretty interesting technology that will assist families in being able to filter things that come into their homes through television or the internet. And I'm really working in Africa a lot. I'm bullish about what's going on in Rwanda. I think it's one of the great stories of our time for forgiveness. Here you have a country, and I'll make this quick, but you have a country where a million people were hacked to death 15 years ago, and now you can walk in safety in that country. There's no corruption. It has a leadership that's so appealing with hardly any resources. And I think it's the hope of Africa, and it's an unbelievable story for forgiveness and redemption.
Wow. So there's a taste of what Peb Jackson's up to.
Yeah, right.
I was going to summarize what you do by saying you do very complicated, effective things, and you do them in such a way that it appear to be easy. And none of it's easy.
Oh, that's good.
Facilitator.
Yeah. I'll try to remember that.
He's more than that.
Yeah.
Your
fingerprints are all over great stuff. So
Abe Lincoln, I believe, said, I may mess this up a little, if you want to convince a man of anything, you must first convince that man that you are his friend. And that's what you are, Peb. You are a friend. And all of these people we're rattling off that maybe people have heard of would say, Peb's my friend. And glad you're a guest today. Thank you for being here, Peb.
It's an honor to be with you guys. Thank you.
You're welcome, and we'll pray you up and bless you all. See you next week here, 7 o'clock on KOA. Thanks for being with us.